Today's Survivor podcast is sponsored by Casper Mattress. Casper created the world's most perfect mattress, and it's sold directly to customers. You won't have to scheme and plot to figure out how to get a good night's sleep because Casper Mattress has merged springy latex and supportive memory foam for a sleep surface that's got just the right amount of sink and just the right amount of bounce. It's an obsessively engineered mattress at a shockingly fair price. I love my Casper Mattress. It is infuriating that my kids wake me up so many times in the middle of the night because I want to be nowhere else but in that Casper mattress as many hours as possible. You know, Time Magazine named it one of the best inventions of 2015, an award-winning mattress that won't disappoint. They've got free shipping and returns to both the U.S. and Canada. You could try out a Casper mattress for 100 nights risk-free in your own home. I guess really anywhere you could try it out. And if you don't love it, if you just like it, they'll come and pick it up and refund you everything. The mattress is made in America, and we've got a great discount for our listeners that you can go ahead and get $50 off any mattress purchase by going to casper.com/Rob. Use the promo code Rob. Terms and conditions apply. So save $50 off a Casper mattress at casper.com/Rob and use the promo code Rob. Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cicerino back here this week to talk with David Bloomberg about why the latest Survivor player is out of the game, and that is Lucy Huang. David, how are you?
That's how
win went. That was like a cliffhanger.
Yeah. Win today. Today.
Well, I had not ever heard that song before. Is that the official Cubs anthem?
It's the unofficial Cubs anthem. It was written a number of years ago.
It's not canon?
It is not canon. However, it is played after every win at Wrigley Field.
Got it. And David, don't make us lose all of our Dodger fan listeners.
Well, I would never do that. They put up a good fight the first game. Obviously, we're recording this before the second game, so we don't know what will happen there. But they gave us a good scare in game one.
I actually don't know any Dodger fan listeners, to be honest. I nothing against them. Let me know. Let me know who you are if we have Dodger fan listeners. I feel like that there are people who root for the Dodgers, but I don't know. I don't know of any Dodger fans. I'm trying to think of any.
Well, there were two of them out in the sea of Cubs fans at the bleachers. I was at the game yesterday, and they felt very surrounded. They were nice guys, but they definitely felt out of place.
All right. Well, let's not go too far into why any baseball team lost this weekend as we go through why Lucy lost. But David, you are fresh off of your game one victory, although we're recording this before game two, so who knows if you'll be in a good mood by the time this podcast goes up.
That's right. That is true. You know, but gotta hope. Gotta hope.
All right. We'll keep the hope alive, like Russell Hance once said. And so we'll get into everything with Lucy. By the way, great job with Mike Bloom. And thanks to Mike for filling in for me last week when on Monday, that was the only day that we could have recorded this. I had to go to Disney, and we don't need to do a podcast of why Rob nearly lost his mind at Disneyland on Monday.
Well, I think you do that podcast sometimes, but maybe not now.
I could probably do a podcast on any given subject that's going on in my life. The question is, who would want to hear it? I could have done a decent podcast, you know, on the car ride home Monday night. But again, that, you know, my wife has a very small amount of tolerance for that sort of thing.
You used to do podcasts in the car all the time, didn't you?
Yep. And then we had kids. And then that's really, I don't think we've done one since. But anyway, David, so let's get into talking about why a Tiger mom lost this week. And so what were your thoughts after episode 4 of Survivor?
Well, first, you mentioned you were at Disney, so you weren't even on the podcast.
Right.
And somehow you were the only one who got the prediction right. Me and Mike Bloom got it wrong. So that's not fair. You weren't even here.
Yes. No, I did want to get my prediction in. I did feel like it was not going to go great for Lucy, but, you know, with the whole thing with an idol, it's always tricky to figure out. But yeah, I'll take the credit for it.
Yeah. Always take credit. Remember, that's what I say. This time I can't take any credit whatsoever. But, with this, you know, coming out of this week, it's not uncommon for me to talk to you here at the end of the Survivor week and tell you that lots of people who have taken a certain position about what happened are wrong. You know, sometimes it's you, sometimes it's Steven, sometimes it's everyone. And this week is completely different because I can't figure out what the heck David was thinking either.
Okay, good. So I thought all Davids are like-minded and you can have some sort of synergy to be able to figure out what he's doing, but I guess not. All right, so why don't we dive in with what Lucy did wrong?
Well, I do like David. We might not be like-minded, but I like David. I still can't figure out how to defend what he did, other than coming up with some fan fiction ideas, you know, like some that were already discussed this week, such as him wanting to get rid of the idol so he isn't a target and focusing on Lucy because nobody liked her anyway, things like that. I don't buy it, though, and I don't know what the reason is. I will disagree with Stephen on something.
What's that?
Which is that he's been saying that this is a case of big move-itis. I just don't see David as the type of person who is going to make a big move just for the sake of making a big move. I think he's too paranoid and skittish for that.
No, I agree.
I just think that in his mind, there is a good reason. We just can't get in there to figure out what that reason is.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Maybe things will become clear. Maybe not. You know, last week when you weren't here, I defended Jessica and company's move, while many people said that they backstabbed Paul too soon for their own good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but who knew that things would go crazy like this? And that leads into a big topic of conversation that I've seen crop up, especially a lot on Twitter, which is the question of whether we can judge how good a move is before we know what happens in the end. You know, basically results-based logic.
The Steven versus Eliza argument.
Yes, yes, that might have something to do with it. So, as I mentioned, I was at the Cubs-Dodgers game at Wrigley last night. So this was game one, and Cubs manager and well-known super genius, Joe Maddon, took out...
Joey starting, Amazing.
Yeah. took out the starting pitcher before the seventh inning, even though he'd only thrown like 77 pitches. And he ended up using three relief pitchers that inning and three more next inning. And then the Cubs still gave up two runs to put themselves in that tie situation where, you know, the Dodgers had caught up and gave us all heart attacks. I can tell you, people in the stands were not happy. And so then the Cubs come up to bat in the eighth inning and the Dodgers made some weird decisions of their own. They did some intentional walks, you know, walked the bases loaded. And the Cubs had to put in a pinch hitter for their pitcher. And they put in a guy who is not known as a good pinch hitter. As a matter of fact, someone dug up a tweet of his from like a year or two ago in which he said, honestly, I suck as a pinch hitter. Yeah, you know, and on top of that, he has a bad back. So everybody's like, what is he doing? What's going on? And then Miggy Montero hit a grand slam home run.
Mm-hmm.
So all of a sudden, Joe Maddon is back to being a super genius again. Or is he? Did he get lucky? And, you know, I'm not going to question the game smarts of Joe Maddon, but that's the type of debate I'm talking about. Do we use results-based logic to say that Maddon was right all along? I don't know. I mean, he ended up winning, mm-hmm. but, you know, that takes us back to Survivor. You know, do we wait to see what happens with David and Jessica to determine if he made the right move? Or do we just say that given the situation and the facts at hand, it was not a good move? Personally, I lean towards the latter. But I also have to point out that a couple days ago, Jessica tweeted out what she labeled as a proverb. And that proverb said, don't jump to conclusions. There may be a perfectly good explanation for what you just saw.
Mm-hmm.
Well, obviously, we'll have to wait to see if there is that good reason. But I mean, it's going to have to be a great one because I can't figure it out.
Yeah. You know, I haven't really given too many of my feelings on this in terms of the Steven versus Eliza debate of the Eliza saying, if you didn't listen to the voicemail podcast, that, well, I guess we'll have to wait and see if it's a good move, because if it worked, then it was a good move. And if it didn't work, then it was a bad move. And Steven says that that is absolutely not the way that you could look at these things to decide if it was a good move or a bad move. Steven's argument is that you can't use the outcome to base whether it was a good decision or not. And I think I'm probably not necessarily maybe exactly in the middle, but somewhere in the middle, in that I think that there may still be more information that comes out which reveals whether or not it's a good move or a bad move. It still may end up not working, but we may end up getting more information that speaks to, actually, this was a good move. It just didn't work out. And I think that probably the example that you could look at is going back to JT and the hidden immunity idol that he tries to give to Russell, where people have argued, well, actually, that's a bad move. And people say, no, well, if it would have worked, it would have been a good move. But then you could say that there was other information that comes to light. So I will still, reserve my judgment, not necessarily based on the outcome, but based on if the additional evidence that comes out to say, like when we talk to these people, when they explain their reasoning, then we can decide whether or not it was a good move or a bad move. Not necessarily how it worked out, but more based on the information at hand.
Right. And it goes back to, or it's similar to something that happens in poker a lot. Now, we don't have a poker player, this season, but if I get all in against you and I have aces, and you have something else, I have an 81% chance of winning.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, though, that 19% of the time, I'm going to lose. And I could get knocked out of the tournament that way. And if that happens, I see people kick themselves. Oh, I shouldn't have done that. That was terrible. Well, that's results-based thinking. Yes, of course I want to get all of the chips in against you when you only have a 19% chance. Because most of the time, I'm going to win. But yes, some of the times I'm going to lose. And you can't go back and say, well, because I lost, that was the wrong thing to do. No, it was still the right thing to do. This time it's kind of flipped. We're all looking at it saying, that was the wrong thing to do. And you're right. More information could come out. And that seems to be what Jessica's tweet is leaning towards very vaguely. I guess we'll find out soon. But speaking of Jessica, some people are talking about Jessica blowing up Ken and David by going to Lucy. And now I'm going to turn around and agree with Steven, specifically what he said on Know It Alls, that she didn't necessarily do anything wrong. Because you have a member of your core alliance saying one thing, and someone who you just aligned with saying another. I think it does make sense to check it out and go back to them. Now, maybe she was too direct about it, but, Jessica's a lawyer, so maybe she thought she could cross-examine Lucy and figure it out. While all of this discussion that we just had is central to the action that happened, it doesn't really tackle the main point of this podcast. There were only two votes against Lucy, but we still need to figure out what happened and where she went wrong. So let's go ahead and talk about why Lucy lost.
Okay, here we go. So let's start off with rule number one to scheme and plot. Did the Tiger Mom dictator scheme and plot, David?
Well, we didn't actually see much of Lucy in action, or in non-action for that matter. So we have to go based on some indirect evidence here. Clearly, she was a solid enough part of the tribe to gather together a solid majority of votes to get rid of former ally Jessica after the anti-Paul vote. So I would say we know she was able to scheme and plot in that way. But beyond that, we know that she was part of the core Gen X alliance, or should I say she was a part of multiple core Gen X alliances. You had the six-person alliance, and then you had the mom alliance that overthrew Paul last week. It appears to me that she ended up within that core group pretty quickly, which would indicate that she followed the part of this rule that says players should get into alliance right away. Other circumstantial evidence is that Lucy said in her day after video that the ladies all trusted her and that she played up the soccer mom aspect to help in that regard. And I do think that this is true because of the way, as we just mentioned, Jessica went back to her after Ken said Lucy was plotting to get rid of Jessica. The way I see it, Jessica only does that is she has pretty much complete trust in Lucy as an ally. And also, Lucy told Josh in the parade interview that she felt she was in a good place where she was getting information from both sides of the tribe and was able to communicate that to others to help them feel safe. So that should have put her in pretty good stead with the likes of Ken, David, and Cece. Should. But all in all, I would say we can conclude that Lucy did a pretty good job with this rule.
But the question for Lucy is going to be, did she scheme and plot too much, David? Specifically, was the decision to come back around and target Jess this week, was that the beginning of the end for her in terms of over scheming?
In a word, yes. But you know me, I'll have many more words than that.
Yes.
So yeah, she had several problems with this rule. And it starts with what I just said about her trying to keep herself in a good place with both the core alliance and those near the bottom of the totem pole. In theory, it was a good idea. In practice, the way she did it apparently made Ken and David feel like they were on the bottom again, like they said. Yes, she was feeding them information, but however she did it, it was in a way that didn't make them feel like they had any input into those decisions, which, you know, said to them, oh, we're back here on the bottom. Now, it's easy to say that being on the bottom shouldn't be a big deal if you're coming up to a swap soon. And indeed, there have been a number of people saying exactly that. But as I discussed last week, you don't know when that swap is. And I know you went over it earlier this week and you said, well, it pretty much always happens after the fourth vote.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how closely people are counting when they're out there. Maybe they should. And maybe especially a super fan like David should be.
What about a super duper fan?
Well, you know, he didn't make the move. So
a survivor super duper fan.
You know what? He was probably counting, but he didn't have a chance to do anything. So it didn't matter. But also, you know, there's been discussions. Well, this is millennials versus Gen X. Maybe they weren't going to swap, or at least in the minds of the players. So if it is next week, which of course we now know it is, then maybe you're okay. But if it isn't next week and you lose again, then who gets voted out? Well, it's going to be the person on the bottom. Now, I know what the counter to this is, which is if David had kept his idol, he wouldn't have had to worry about it next week anyway. I just think that David may have wanted to preempt that and get rid of the person who made him feel like he was on the bottom. Also, I do have to question the topic you just brought up at the top of this rule here.
How dare you?
No. I'm not questioning you. Okay. I'm going back to your question.
Thank you.
You know, okay. Why Lucy felt like she needed to get rid of Jessica right away. Did she backstab before she really needed to? Because Cece was an easy target. In fact, she was such an easy and obvious target that when they told Jessica Cece was the target, Jessica was like, okay. She never questioned it because why would she? So why did Lucy decide Jessica absolutely had to go before Cece? There's been a lot of people questioning why David made the move he did, but I need to throw it back in Lucy's lap. Why did she make the move she made, which is the one that helped cause David to do what he did? She just did it too soon. And I think there's some insight to that in her final words. She said, I just went full force and probably should have taken it a little slower.
Full tilt.
Full tilt.
You could say, yeah.
That's one of the lessons I was learning, but unfortunately, a little too late. She also said, I almost controlled the whole situation. It almost worked. Well, that's two almost too many. And as a new blogger, Christian Williams, noted on Twitter, she almost won the whole game when it had almost just begun. So,
almost.
Yeah, almost. Lots of almosts there. But one thing she didn't almost do, unfortunately, she plotted and schemed too much too soon.
Rule number three is about being flexible. I do feel like that perhaps the Tiger Mom struggled in this area, David.
Yeah, a little bit. Now, she was flexible when Jessica wanted to vote Paul out.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, as we saw, you know, she was apparently the new dictator. And we only once again need to look at her own words to see it. Okay. Mm-hmm. So she had a web confessional, which occurred after the reward challenge. And there she talked about how things are for her at home. She said things like, I want things my way all the time. My way is the right way. She also said, my way or the highway. Lucy's never wrong. That's always what people say. In her day after video, she said that she told herself not to be so controlling, but the conditions and hunger basically strip you down to, you know, the person that you usually are. I give props to Lucy for recognizing the situation. You could see it in some of those quotes. She indicated she was trying to fight back against her own instincts. So another one from the web confessional, she said, I'm not trying to be so controlling. I'm being more open-minded to other people's ideas. I can listen to other men and it can work. She also added, as more and more time goes by, I'm okay releasing the control, basically. And one of life's important lessons is it doesn't have to be just you and you're controlling everything. And she also said, you know, that you need to communicate with others in the way that they want to be communicated to. So again, she seemed to be coming to some realizations about herself and the need to be more flexible with people. Those realizations just came too late. She wasn't there yet.
Okay. Rule number four for Lucy and for everybody, I guess. Don't let your emotions control you. How about Lucy and her emotions? Now, it's interesting in terms of her emotions because she was critical of Ken for having emotions.
Ken's so emotional like a girl.
Yeah. So Would we say that she did a good job of controlling her emotions?
It's a little iffy. It wasn't immediately clear to me if this played a role, but after, you know, reviewing the information out there, I think that she did have issues with this. Again, going to her day after video. First, she said the people they voted off before her, obviously, were people she wanted gone anyway. So that led me to wonder why she blamed Jessica for leading the charge against Paul. I think she answered this in her interview with you, because she said she started feeling regret when she realized that Chris and Brett felt betrayed. So in other words, she felt bad for them feeling bad. That's a whole lot of feeling going on there, which, of course, is another word for emotions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she wanted Jessica out because Jessica convinced her to do something that made her friends feel bad. And it just sounds to me like she was redirecting her emotions and putting the blame on someone other than herself. I mean, she had agreed to this, and then she saw the results of it and went, oh, that's Jessica. Jessica did that. Mm-hmm. And I also think that emotion came into it another way to allow her to, you know, justify or rationalize targeting Jessica. She said Jessica told her that she was on the bottom of the overall, that core alliance before, and that made Lucy feel insecure. To her, it was Jessica trying to make her feel paranoid. Now, I didn't see it that way. I saw it as Jessica passing along information as she tried to get support for overthrowing Paul last week. Because, of course, you're going to say, hey, we need to get rid of Paul, and here's the reason why. You're on the bottom. I'm on the bottom. You know, we need to do this now before we end up getting voted out. So for Lucy to say that was Jessica trying to make me feel bad, it just seemed to be a rationalization, again, on her part to soothe her own guilt for going after Jessica.
Mm-hmm.
So I think she's just redirecting a lot, but it's really her own emotions that were causing some of this. And I think that those directed her in a way to decide how to vote and who to target. And she shouldn't have let that happen.
To me, I really think that what happened with Lucy is that you had the whole conversation that happened between Paul and Jessica. I think it was sort of late in the game. It was probably right before tribal council. Jessica came to Lucy on Sunday and was like, hey, we got to do this. Paul's going to try to knock out all of the women. All the guys are together. We got to make this move. I think that Lucy felt a little bit put on the spot. She didn't know what to do. I think she felt like everybody was going to be in on it. And then they get back to tribal council, and then she's looking at her tribe and she's like, hold on, I want to be with Chris and Brett. These are the guys that I have the most trust in. They're pissed off. So now I need to sort of just like make things right by them. And I think she was happy to throw Jessica under the bus in order to get back on track with Chris and Brett. And I don't know necessarily where the scapegoating of Jessica like is actual and how much of it is just trying to have a name to throw back out to Chris and Brett. But I really just feel like that she wanted to be back in an alliance with those guys. And she didn't feel great about any sort of alliance with Sunday, Jessica, David, and Ken.
Yeah, and I think that ascribes more strategy to her than perhaps I have just now.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm basing it on her own words. You know, she saw they felt bad. She regretted it. Those are emotion-based words that she was using. And rather than I realized I had made a strategic error and needed to get back in with my tight allies.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I'm ascribing, you know, some problems here to emotion.
Okay. David, rule number five is pretend to be nice, play the social game. How did the dictator do with this?
You seem to almost be suggesting that you know the answer.
Shh.
Shh. Yeah. Who knew what a harbinger that was, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, come on. Lucy herself said in tribal council, I guess I could have been nicer. And then mm-hmm. she added, that's how I talk. I can be blunt. Okay, I know people like that. Some people in the work world may think I'm like that sometimes. But that can be a problem on Survivor. And, you know, as David noted, she said the wrong thing and rubbed people the wrong way, which pissed people off. Again, looking at her day after video, she said that at home, whatever she says goes. But that didn't work with Ken because he's more sensitive. Again, I don't think you can put blame on others, in this case, calling him sensitive, if you're the one that's behaving badly. So a couple minutes ago, we just discussed how I felt she was shifting blame to Jessica Well, here, I feel like she's shifting blame to Ken. Like, I didn't treat you the right way, so it's your fault for being too sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one minute she admits she could have done things better, but then the next she's directing the blame elsewhere. As for other parts of her social game, well, she admitted to you in the interview that part of her purple edit could be attributed to the fact that she tried to play a quiet game early because she felt she'd be a target due to her physique. However,
Zeke's on the other tribe.
Yeah. Physique.
Oh.
Oh, wait. Maybe that way if Figgy and Zeke got together, it would be physique.
Yeah. Could be a long shot, but maybe. We'll keep our fingers crossed.
That's right. That's right. She clearly felt she had done some good work in the social game. And I think other than the incident with Ken that attracted most of the attention this week, she indicated in her interviews that she thought they were on good terms. She also said in interviews that she would always make sure to talk to David, even though he was outside the main alliance. She believed she was being motherly in a way, you know, but that also makes me wonder, considering the way she's interpreted her own actions in other situations, maybe she wasn't just being motherly in terms of nurturing, but also in terms of telling her so-called children what to do. Based on what we saw, that wouldn't surprise me.
Mm-hmm. All right, David, rule number six is don't be too much of a threat. Now, this is interesting because you had David felt compelled to use an idol on her, and then you would think that you wouldn't waste an idol on somebody if you didn't think that they were a threat or at least threatening. So did Lucy violate don't be too much of a threat?
Like I mentioned, she thought that she was going to be perceived as a threat due to her physique. But I really don't think that part was an issue because most tribes would be thrilled to have a strong woman on their tribe early in the game. So we'll put that part aside. But like you mentioned, she was a threat to David, who was the most important factor this week. You know, in her interview with Josh, she said that she believed David felt that she was a threat, and that's why he needed to use the idol. Well, okay, how was she a threat? I think it goes back to what we talked about earlier, that she made him feel like he was on the bottom and being spoken to like his opinion didn't matter. Being treated that way may have made him believe he had to change things up once again. Now, mind you, I'm not saying he made the right move, but I'm saying
the David right move.
That's right. It's already confusing enough having David talking about David. You
know? The David wrong move.
So whether he made the David right move or the David right move, or the David right wrong move. What I'm saying is she made him feel like he needed to do something, and he did.
Rule number seven, vote out the weak, then the strong, then the weak, then the strong. Does this apply to when we're idling people out of the game?
Yes and no, because, yeah, I mean, obviously the tribe should still be in the phase of getting rid of the weak. And, you know, again, two possible meanings to that, either those who will hurt you in challenges or those who will hurt the overall tribe dynamic. Now, the tribe obviously did not vote out Lucy. David did, with a little help from Cece, which is ironic because it was probably the two weakest tribe members voting out someone who was strong. So, no, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to talk about what the tribe should be doing. However, from David's perspective, Lucy's bossiness was detrimental to the tribe dynamic, or at least his little portion of the tribe. That's about as far as I can stretch it, though, because, you know, like you said, when it comes to an idol play, sometimes this rule just kind of goes out the window.
Okay. We have our appendices. What first has to do with finding idols. I don't think that Lucy was aware of the hidden immunity idols up until the point where she got idol out of the game.
Well, you know, I mean, yeah, should she?
I mean, that's probably the wrong choice of words. Okay. That she sounded like in her exit interview that she suspected David might have had the idol, but she did not seem to be looking for an idol at any point on her own.
Well, right. I mean, as far as I can tell here, it seems to be a tribe filled with Andrew Savages who look down on the idea of idol hunting. Either that or they just all figured David already had it and said, we're not going to bother. But in this case, it was just such a shock because no one expected him to play it to save Jessica at this stage of the game. And even on Twitter, when I was live tweeting and had a discussion, you know, going with some people, someone said, oh, David's going to play it to save Jessica. I said, are you crazy? He's way too paranoid to play it to save someone else. And well, we saw how that worked.
What are you going to do? Yeah. All right. So Final Tribal Council is the second appendix. I don't know if Lucy was going to be getting too many Final Tribal Council votes.
No, no. She might have told them they had to vote for her, but she didn't make it that far.
Yeah, not at this point. All right. So, David, why did Lucy lose? Lucy lose is a good hashtag.
Lucy lose?
Yeah.
I feel like it's easy to visualize David as sort of a Charlie Brown on his tribe. And
like Spencer?
Even more Charlie Brownish than Spencer, I think. And
he does have Charlie Brown's haircut.
Yeah. We just need to get him the shirt.
Yeah.
But, you know, normally Charlie Brown gets picked on and he ends up looking like the loser. But in this case, Charlie Brown was the one who pulled the football away from Lucy. Sometimes it's the smallest things that can make the difference between a win and a loss. Going back to our baseball discussion, sometimes your whole season can come down to one fastball left hanging a little too far over the plate by your pitcher. In Survivor, it can come down to just one comment here or there. According to her CBS post-game interview, Lucy believes she would have been okay if she had just approached Ken differently and asked him if he was okay with the vote rather than telling him what to do.
Mm-hmm.
But as we've discussed here, there was a lot more to it than that. Lucy pushed too hard too soon. She went along with Jessica's plan, but then had immediate buyer's remorse and, in my opinion, let her emotions get the better of her. So she flipped on her former ally. She wanted to control the game. She wanted to control the players. She wanted to control all the decisions. But while she was slowly coming to the realization that it wasn't a smart way to play Survivor, it was too little, too late. By that point, she had already pissed off Ken and David and had made David feel insecure about his position. Lucy obviously needed to ease up a bit in a variety of ways, from the strategic to the emotional to the social. But she wasn't able to do that in these early stages of the game. And it explains why Lucy lost.
So, all right, so let's segue from Lucy into what's coming up in next week's episode. And we are presuming a tribe swap. Now, two weeks ago, we talked about a tribe swap and we thought that's what was going to happen. Are we guilty of potentially getting duped again by the commercial?
I don't think so, because this time we heard the infamous words, drop your buffs.
Mm-hmm. And then pick them back up.
Yeah. God, that would be horrible if he did that to us, wouldn't it? Drop your buffs. Mm-hmm. And here are some clean buffs, because I know those were dirty, you know?
All right. So, David, in terms of predictions, do you have any way of predicting what could happen next with a tribe swap in the mix?
I think there is a way, actually. I don't think that it will be as simple as a majority taking out a member of a minority tribe after they're mixed. I do think there will be some mixing and matching pretty quickly. And I base this because last week when I was talking to Mike Bloom, I thought everything was up in the air then, especially on the millennials tribe. And I still think that's the case. So, you know, we know David is ready to turn on most of his Gen X tribe mates at the drop of a hat or the drop of a buff. On the flip side, I could certainly see Chris or Brett eager to get together with millennials to take a shot at David or Jessica.
Ooh.
And, you know, Cece may well be a liability to whatever tribe she ends up on. These are still tribal challenges. So if she causes a loss, she could be the first target. You know, among the millennials, as I mentioned, I discussed last week that Michelle wants to work with Adam, not Figgy. And Zeke said he thinks Jay may be his best ticket. Of course, I think both of them are flexible enough to change that depending on where they end up, as long as no one tells Jay to, you know, go to school or get a job or have a life.
Okay, high school, college, 9 to 5, get a life.
Yeah.
Such a weird quote.
It's a really weird quote. Can I touch on something that you brought up?
Sure,
'cause I think it's interesting in terms of David's play of the idol. I think it's almost kind of like a game of pool where, you know, a bunch of the balls were together and then David taking out Lucy just sort of like knocked all of the balls everywhere. And now I kind of feel like that almost every single person from Gen X is going to be selling out whoever just to get in with a group of millennials, because there's no Gen X alliance to cling to. It's not like you're going to see, you know, Chris and Brett trying to cling to something like, oh, I got to stick with Ken and Sunday. Well, I mean, what could they potentially in CC? I mean, that tribe is just so fractured that I think any of them that swap after this tribe shakeup are going to try to cling to whatever sort of swap tribe they end up on.
So you're saying that David kicked Gen X in the balls. Is that what your metaphor was about?
Basically, like, because if David doesn't make that move, yeah, I think you could see a situation where Chris and Brett feel like, okay, we just got to stick together through this part of the game and get back to Lucy and Sunday and Ken. And that's our tight five that we have moving forward. What? There's no tight anything on. There's a tight two of Chris and Brett, and it seems like that there's something that's going on between David, Ken, and Cece. There's like a two and a three, and then there's Jess, and I guess she's with David, but I wouldn't say that it's any sort of a foursome between Cece, David, Ken, and who the hell knows where Sunday is. So there is no Gen X alliance.
Right, right. And, you know, you mentioned Cece and David. I don't think they're tight at all, because there was a web confessional from Cece, which I just laughed my butt off at, because Cece actually said when they lose challenges, it always happens at the puzzle round. And you know who does those puzzles? It's David. And I'm thinking, yeah, because that balance beam was one hell of a puzzle.
Shots fired.
Well, come on. You know, it's always the puzzle round because you're already behind because of what's happened. So at least in that particular one. But so mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, that could have just been, you know, one side.
To be fair, they spent 45 minutes right on that puzzle the other day. Right. But, you know, don't blame any the challenge loss on the people who, and basically it was the people pulling the ropes. You know, how bad could they have screwed that up?
Right, right. I was thinking more of the one, you know, the balance beam prior. And the fact that I think in the reward challenge, I can't remember who it was that said it, but they said Cece can't even swim, basically. So she wasn't much use when it came to the reward challenge. But anyway, my point was, I don't know how tight they are or if they just, you know, came together for this one vote. So, yeah, I'm agreeing with you because I don't know what will happen, especially if those duos are split up. If Chris and Brett are split, who knows who they will cling to if David and Ken are split. You know, we just mm-hmm. don't know. And, you know, obviously the commercials focused on, oh, no, what if Failure is split up? And I don't care. Honestly, I could not possibly care less whether or not they're split up. But I do think that those two may be in the most danger no matter what. Because, sure, Cece hasn't shown much ability in, well, either challenges or scheming. So she's right up there at the top of my list for who could get a torch snuffed. But if it's not her, if her tribe somehow wins and Figgy is on the opposite tribe, I think that Figgy will be the one going home. So I'm saying Cece or Figgy.
Okay, wow.
Figgy sucks at survival.
Wow. Yeah, to me, it comes down to a question of, will the millennials pick off the Gen Xers, or will the millennials use the Gen Xers as pawns to accomplish what they want to do? Because we saw back at that first tribal council that they had, the millennials are a fractured group themselves, where there is a division where Zeke and Adam, potentially two of the most game savvy members of this tribe, are on the outs. They have maybe Hannah, potentially they could pull her back in. But if they were able to get a couple of these Gen Xers back with them, they might have enough numbers to take out somebody from the Triforce or accomplish whatever they want to do. Potentially Michaela is somebody who also might be able to maneuver the numbers to get out somebody that she doesn't like in Figgy as well. That's a possibility. Or you could see the scenario where the millennials stick together and pick off one of the Gen Xers. I'm sort of reminded of back in Survivor Fans versus Favorites 2, back in Karamoan, after they had a swap where you had the favorites outnumbering the fans. And then after the tribe swap, they still, like, all of the fans were trying to join up with the favorites. And you still had a bunch of people went out, like the Julia Landauers of the world, and people, and they just continued to pick off the pagonging and the pre-merge. I wonder if which scenario is going to happen.
I do think the millennials are going to make use of the Gen X, especially someone like Zeke, who, you know, is kind of a self-hating millennial. and Michelle, who is looking for pawns. And I just think, like you said, Adam also, I think that they will use those people, like you said, to get rid of some of the more annoying members of their own tribe. That's why I singled out Figgy. Mm-hmm. I do think that if CeCe's tribe loses, they may take a look at her, and the Gen X people may be willing to sacrifice her easily. So whatever Gen X people besides her are on that tribe may say, to prove to you that we're loyal millennials, get rid of her. You can get rid of her, you know, first, and then we'll help you do the rest. Because they know that she's the weakest link when it comes to challenges. If CeCe's tribe loses, I say it's CeCe. If Figgy's tribe loses, and of course Figgy is on the opposite tribe, then I'll say Figgy. If by some chance Figgy and CeCe are on the same tribe, and that tribe still somehow manages to not lose, then I'm guessing Taylor, because I think Figgy and Taylor are going to be split, because otherwise why all these boo-hooing commercials?
Well, they could get split up this week, and then who knows how it goes after that, but they might just, it might be a plot point, David.
Well, I think it's a plot point that they're going to get split up, and then one of them is going to get permanently split up.
All right, we'll see. Just for the sake of being different, you know, Josh was predicting in the wiggle room that he thought that Chris has a good shot to go home, that in that scenario that the millennials stick together and say who's going to be the biggest threat after the merge. I'll put out a third theory of maybe there's a Gen Xer that just doesn't fit in and isn't the most likely to flip things up and work with the millennials. I'll say Sunday. Even though I know she gets along good with the millennials.
And I feel like my kids that are millennials, they'll give anything a try.
And that maybe they try voting out Sunday.
Well, yeah, I hope not. I have to say, I think Josh is crazy. I don't think that anyone will go after Chris this soon. I think it's far too early. And the millennials were in awe of his abilities in the challenge. So I got to think that if some millennials get him on their tribe, they're going to be loving it. They're not going to want to get rid of him.
Everything that Josh is saying makes sense for, it would be a very effective strategy. And I think that you would see a tribe that was more organized, something like the favorites, where they say, okay, we're going to go into this merge or we're going to go into this swap and just keep getting out the numbers from the other side, because then there's a better chance for all of us to win. I think that sort of flies in the face of what the millennials are about, this sort of like organized principle of systematically destroying the other side. I think that they may want to just like, let's see how this feels. Let's try this on. Let's try this 80 different ways.
Give anything a try. They'll try it with anybody and they'll try it 80 different ways.
So I think that probably they will not just systematically pick off the other side.
Right, right. I agree. And it would have been fun, I think, to see if the millennials had lost another challenge before the swap, what would have happened. Because a lot of them were talking about how they wanted to switch things up. And I just would have liked to see which direction it would have gone. We won't see that, but we'll see how they act when they're on the swap tribe.
All right, David. So why do you want to go for the hashtag? So you want to go with hashtag David Wrong, hashtag Lucy Lose. What do you like?
Or hashtag physique.
Physique. Well, it's your podcast. What do you want to do?
Well, I think Zeke has been in a number of hashtags already. So Lucy Lose, you know, I think that's a good one. Are we just spelling it as Lucy Lose, L-O-S-E, or kind of like Lucy
Yeah,
Lose?
Do that. Do okay. that. Not the plural of the woman that was in Charlie's Angels. Yeah. Okay. And just David, just so we have it on the record, so your official pick is Figgy for this week.
It's CeCe or Figgy.
Now, what, we get two picks now?
Sure. What? I can't change the rules.
No, stop it. Stop it. No, stop.
Well, in that case, it'll be CeCe. I'm just going to stick with what I've been doing here, and eventually I'll be right.
All right.
People that write down Figgy's name, go home.
Yeah. We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. All right. David, can I tell you what's coming up on the blogs on robisawebsite.com?
Please do.
Okay. Already up on the website, Scott Gallagher. He has a new favorite player and looks back at some music videos for 90s films, including a cameo from a presidential candidate. We won't say which one.
I bet I can guess.
On
it's Johnson, isn't
Saturday.
It? It's Johnson.
Yes, Gary Johnson. Yeah. On Saturday, Michael Trudeau, we posted his blog looking at the edit He took a look at the humor in The Goat Hunt. Christian Williams, new blogger Christian Williams, as you already mentioned, he talked about the possible pitfalls of leadership on Survivor. And then coming up at the start of this week, Catherine Lucas looks back at the original Golden Boy, Blake Towsley, to see if history will repeat itself. And then on Tuesday, Dan Heaton is back to explore how the theme has jumbled the narrative this season, and not the jumble, somebody's flame is going out tonight.
Yeah, that was a jumble, all right.
And then finally, before the next episode on Wednesday, Christine is going to take a look at the world of Derek Zoolander to explore Ken's facial expressions as a male model.
Yeah, I'll have to talk to my millennial kids about Zoolander in order to understand that one.
Yes, and in her blog this week, which is called Crouching Tiger Mom, Hidden Immunity Idol. That's good. That's good. All right. That's all up on the website. Go to robiswebsite.com/blogs. All right, David, all good stuff. You can follow David Bloomberg on Twitter at David Bloomberg. And then, of course, we are going to be back on Wednesday night with the, I'm sorry, no, I misspoke, David. We are not going to do the Survivor Know-It-Alls on Wednesday night because of presidential debate number 3.
Yeah, I think you should have done counter-programming. I think that there will be a core group of people who would much rather see you debate Stephen.
Mm-hmm. Of course. Well, I'm not debating Stephen Fishback again until I get a drug test on Stephen. You know, that people have said that Stephen Fishback, I've heard people are saying these things. Stephen Fishback does the Survivor Know-It-Alls on drugs.
Well, is wine and cheese a drug?
No. Well, people loved it, the episode that he was all drugged up by when he was sick last season. And he was on some medication. And people wanted him that way every week.
Well, you know, I also heard that Know-It-Alls is rigged.
Sometimes. Sometimes. Anyway, David, so we're going to have the Know-It-Alls coming up on this Thursday morning, 11 a.m. Eastern time, 8 a.m. Pacific, and then Kimmy Kappenberg on the recap and Allie Lasher on the voicemail. So it should be a very fun week once again.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Yes, pumpkin, yes.
Yes, pumpkin, yes. All right, so make sure you subscribe to the podcast. Go to robswebsite.com/iTunes. All right, everybody. We'll talk to you again soon. Take care. Bye.